You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
12-year-old Lee Spencer is in the back seat of his family's car as it's pulling up the driveway of the house they are moving into. Lee notices a young girl looking at him from the upstairs window. No one else in the car sees her. This is the beginning of a 4-year journey of Lee Spencer's unbelievable events that happened in and outside of that house. Spencer's Ghosts, available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, any place you get your books. Available in paperback and ebook.
This is Warren Ajous, author of Evidence of Extraterrestrials. You are listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today, I want to welcome back to the show, Warren Ajous. Warren was on the show about 3 years ago. Now he has a new book out. It's called Close Encounters, Exploring the Mysteries of Alien Abduction. I'm telling you, if you're looking for a book on that is nonfiction, that is real, Warren has done extensive research in this book. And I'll be right back with my conversation with Warren Ajous right after these brief messages.
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardy Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardy Alliance today.
Before we get started, Warren, thank you for sending me the copy of your new book, Close Encounters, Exploring the Mysteries of Alien Abductions. Man, that's a great book, and I can't believe it's been 3 years since you were last on the show. Welcome back to Ghost in the Valley.
Yeah, thank you so much, Al. It's always nice being on the show. I'm a fan of the show. I listen to the episode, so it's always nice being back. And I can't believe it's been 3 years since the first book came out, to be honest.
You had a lot of research that you did in this book, and it's really well done.
Yeah, it took many years of research, more years to write it. Yeah, it's been quite the journey, to be honest.
If you can, explain to my listeners, what's the difference between a UFO and a UAP?
So the two are basically interchangeable. UFO and UAP, I use the words interchangeably. It's simply, they changed the word to signify, I believe, a change in how authorities view the phenomenon. UFOs are commonly associated with green little men running around, UFOs invading the White House. The word is not associated with the seriousness that comes with the phenomenon. I believe that UAP, which stands for Unidentified Anomalous Phenomena, it was introduced to signify a change in how we view the phenomenon. But they both refer to a UFO, an unidentified object. Not necessarily a flying object, it can be a submerged object, but an unidentified craft.
We've come a long way since Project Blue Book and Project Sign, and from UFOs to UAPs, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
It all comes down to the cover-ups. They could at least come up with a better story than a flock of birds, a weather balloon. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I think if we go back 50 years, at no point would the forefront whistleblowers at that point, I don't think they would ever consider the fact that we'd be having congressional hearings about the phenomenons.
What really baffles me from these Senate hearings, the groups that the government puts together to investigate the UFO crashes and sightings can't answer the question that's brought to them, that they know the answer, but they just can't answer it in a public forum.
Like I say in this book, so whereas in the first book I ask, are UFOs real? That question is no longer relevant in the second book. The question is no longer are UFOs real, but why are they here? And I think that everyone acknowledges that this phenomenon is real. Everyone acknowledges that this is a very serious phenomenon. And you know, definitely so. And I completely understand why they would cover up such. I don't agree with it. I need to clarify that. But I do understand, because there are so many implications which come with the phenomenon. I mean, at the end of the book, I devote a chapter to this where I explore the implications. And there are philosophical implications. For instance, many people are brought up in believing in some form of religion, right? And in religion, we always believe that man is the superior being on earth. That's what's written in the Bible. And now, if we're admitting that these beings are emotionally, spiritually, physically, technologically superior to us, then that means that all that we have been hearing about, all that we've been learning, it's not really relevant anymore. So there's that. First of all, there's that philosophical implication. There's also the technological implication that we're admitting that these beings come from different. Or let me say they come outside of Earth. That means that interstellar travel is possible. That means that they are technologically superior to us in every sense of the word. What does that mean? What happens if these beings
suddenly suddenly decide that they want to take over, but by every word they are capable of doing so. So there are so many implications. So from that regard, I do understand why any government would want to cover that up. In the Cold War, the United States wanted to prove that they are superior to the Russians. So what if there was a race that is superior both to the US, to the Russians, to the Germans? How would you even control that? How would you even let go of that power?
In your book, The Communication Between Us and the Extraterrestrials, say they don't want to hurt us, yet some are probed and hurt. Some have long recurring ailments.
And I think that is, I think we expect these authorities to have answers, but I think it would be foolish to expect anyone to have answers to a phenomenon that, quite frankly, we cannot know. This is all assumptions. Lou Elizondo, I saw an interview last week where he said that if we assume that these beings do not have malicious intentions, we are simply wrong. We are simply assuming. And as a matter of fact, so many cases that I cover in Close Encounters prove that these beings have malicious intentions. They have harmed human beings. As a matter of fact, a few years ago, the DIA released a paper where it showed that the military was studying the injuries that were sustained by military personnel who came into close contact to UFOs. And these injuries were not only physical, but also psychological. And so this is a phenomenon that has been investigated by the DIA, by the authorities. And these same injuries have been reported in the majority of abduction cases that happened many decades ago. I don't think, before I go the second book, I used to think that these, let's say, for a lack of a better word, non-human intelligences, they cared for and wanted to protect human beings, planet Earth. And that very well could be the case. I'm not saying that I have the answers. I do not have the answers. But then I started doing so much research about it, and I realized that there are many cases which contradict that belief. And I think this is an inherent part of the human nature, where we try to make meaning out of things. As human beings, we're not comfortable with saying, I do not know. I mean, we try to answer what happens after death, right? I mean, nobody knows. But in the same way that the alien abductions, we try to answer, why do these alien abductions happen? And we try to come up with all of these sort of answers that, they care about us, they're trying to protect Earth. In reality, we do not know that. We're simply assuming that. And I think we need to be careful where we listen to anyone who claims to have the answers. Because we do not have the answers. We do not know why they abduct human beings. And the only evidence we do have shows that they are in control. They are here for their own purposes and not ours. And only they know why this phenomenon takes place, not us.
I love the new book on reverse engineering. Do you believe some of the crafts we are seeing are our own, that we made from the crafts we found?
Yeah, I'm glad we're touching up on this, because in the introduction of the book, I do not start away with the cases. In the beginning of the book, I start by lining out two things. That if these cases are real, then that means that outside of Earth, there is an intelligent, an advanced life form. That is the first premise. The second premise is that if these cases are genuine, that means that interstellar travel is possible. And there is evidence for both of these implications. Now, in regards to interstellar travel, there is one testimony which is hands down the most convincing testimony, and that is of Bob Lazar. I'm not going to spend so much time talking about Bob Lazar, because there is so much good material out there. There's Jeremy Corbell's documentary, there's Bob Lazar's own book, Dreamland, and time and time again, Bob Lazar's story has been proven correct. And, you know, this is in 1989, where in 1989, Bob Lazar, using the pseudonym Dennis, he stated that we have in our possession alien aircraft and we are reverse engineering it. And in my book, I prove, I use Bob Lazar's, obviously, information and his credibility to show how indeed interstellar travel is possible. And that is the fact that in 1989 we have a testimony, and now in 2024 we're having whistleblowers, we have David Grush, amongst others, who are saying the same exact thing. At some point we need to acknowledge that this is true, this is happening, and we do have in our possession alien aircraft, we do have programs that work on reverse engineering it, but I could not write about alien abductions without acknowledging the fact that the only way alien abductions happen and the only way UFOs are real is if interstellar travel is possible.
I also love this, what you had put in your book. If you take a standard sewing needle and hold it at arm's length, you look through that hole, that is our galaxy. It gives you an idea of the amount of galaxies that are out there.
Yeah, I mean, the latest information we have, which I include in the book, is from the Hubble telescope. And, you know, they did a study in 2016, I think it was, and they found out through the Hubble telescope that there are 2 trillion galaxies.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At least. Yeah, 2 trillion. I cannot even comprehend my head around that number. It's massive. And to all the listeners out there, if you do read my book, I do leave footnotes referencing where I get the information. So if at any point you think, I do not agree with him, this is not me, Warren, spewing out facts, you know, out of nowhere. This is all research-based. So we can look ahead, look at the footnotes and carry out and continue the research yourself. But in 2016, we found out that we have at least 2 trillion galaxies. Now, what is the likelihood that out of those 2 trillion galaxies, human beings are the only conscious life form out there? I think that is quite, egotistical to believe so.
Back in my day, we were told there may be life in our galaxy. Now we find out there are at least 2 trillion galaxies. And I love that your book and the research you put into it.
Thank you for your kind words. And many times, you know, people ask me, what do you think? You know, are alien abductions real? Are UFOs real? And my answer is, my opinion is completely irrelevant in this. This is not a matter of opinion. I will simply give you the information. I will tell you where I got that information from. And then you can come up to your own conclusion. At no point in the book do I try to say that these are 100% authentic and genuine alien abduction cases. There are cases which there's little room for speculation because of the genuineness of it. But I provide many different hypotheses. You know, is the person lying? Is the person coming up with a hoax? Is this a genuine alien abduction case? But at all point, I provide the information so that the reader can, first of all, carry out the research themselves. And second of all, they can come to an informed decision, an informed conclusion. And that is all I want from the readers. You know, I do not want the readers to believe all the cases I write about. I do not want that. I do not want them to not believe anything that I mention. I simply want everyone to digest the information, assimilate it, and then come to an informed conclusion, even if that differs from mine or anyone else's.
I'm blown away by the Drake equation by Frank Drake.
Yeah.
You break down the equation very well.
Yeah, Dr. Frank Drake, yeah. Yeah, in that part of the book, I wanted to provide some mathematical insight into it. And even the Drake Committee was a committee out of a bunch of experts. So you had Frank Drake himself, you had Carl Sagan on the committee as well. And it's basically an equation where you multiply a bunch of factors. For example, the average rate of a star formation a year. It's a bunch of these factors. And when you if you use the lowest numbers possible, there will still be between 1,000 and 100 million galaxies which can sustain the evolution of intelligent civilization. Now, by all means, I'm not saying that the Drake equation is... I mean, it is very, very simplistic. It makes a lot of assumptions. But the reason I include it is because from many decades ago, scientists have been fascinating with the idea that we are not alone. And we've been trying to prove it using mathematical equations. We've been trying to prove it using so many things. We're longing for these existential answers. And at the end of the day, the possibility that we are the only intelligent life form out there, it's simply not possible. And you know, and I get why people would be hesitant to accept it. I mean, like I said, I mean, in the Genesis itself, there is a statement where, I don't know it by heart, but basically, I'll paraphrase it, where it says, God said that mankind will rule all the creatures that move on the ground. So from the very beginning, we are told that species, humans, are the most advanced. Suddenly, that is no longer applicable. What do we do? You know, what do we do with that ball of anxiety that we are left with, you know?
We have to stop thinking the old way. Science has come a long way, colorized the galaxies, etc. The new telescopes and pictures, you know. You also touched on S4.
Yeah, so it's not as AF51. It's, you have to bypass it, and it is built within mountains, so you would not be able to see it. It's a few miles off Area 51. As a matter of fact, Bob Lazar stated that to access it, they used to go to Area 51, and then from there on, they would be put on a bus with the windows covered, and they would drive them to this unknown location that it is inside the mountains. So you cannot see it with satellites or any of the sort. And that location is known as S4.
You touched upon the four stages of close encounters. You seem to touch on the close encounters of the third kind in this book. Would you consider that the most rarest is the seventh level?
So the premises of the first book and the second book, I use Hynek's UFO scale. And Hynek, Dr. Alan Hynek, he was an astronomer, and he used to advise the Air Force on many projects, you know, Project Sign, Blue Book, Grudge. So he studied the phenomenon quite a lot. And he developed several stages. And the higher the stage is, then the closer you were to the aircraft and to the beings. In the first stages, so there is level one, nocturnal lights, when you just see lights in the sky, nothing more. Level two, it is daylight discs, where you see a UFO in the daylight. Then level three, it's radar visual, where the UFO shows up on radar, and you also make visual contact with it. Then there's level four, which is close encounters of the first kind, where the UFO is in close proximity and you can see the UFO very clearly and you can make out its characteristics. Then there is level five, which is close encounters of the second kind, where the UFO is in such close vicinity that the viewer, the observer, they experience immediate and intermediate after effects. And these after effects include both physical after effects such as nausea, headaches, among, just to name a few, as well as psychological, you know, like anxiety and a post-traumatic response. And these five levels, I covered them in my first book, where I just focus on UFO sightings. In the second book, Close Encounters, I discuss the sixth and seventh level, which are the more sinister levels. Level six includes close encounters of the third kind. Those of us who've seen, who've watched the movie, obviously it's an indication of what it is. It's basically when the individual is very close to the UFO, to the point that they see a non-human creature, a non-human entity. Many times the I'm going to use the word alien just so that I do not have to repeat the word non-human. The alien being normally would be short in nature. They would have large heads with almond-shaped eyes. Many times they would have a reason why the encounter happens. And that is what brings me to the seventh level, close encounters of the fourth kind. And that is when the individual is abducted.
We're going to take a short break, and I'll be right back with my conversation with Warren Ajuice.
And when I was writing the book, I came across so many cases. So many cases, and they were, the majority of them were simply a hoax. One of the first reported abductions was by George Adamski, and his account was very, very bombastic. I'm not saying that it is definitely not true, but I personally do not necessarily believe it. And the reality is that for there to be a genuine alien abduction, it is extremely uncommon. And those alien abductions which are genuine and did indeed happen, more often than not, there would be a rational reason why. It wouldn't necessarily be an alien abduction. As a matter of fact, I pose three important factors to prove whether it is a genuine case or not. The first factor is certainly the evidence. We need to look at evidence. Without evidence, we cannot do anything. What is the physical evidence? What is the corroborating evidence? For instance, are there landing marks? Were there analysis of the soil, the clothes, radiation levels? Then there is the second factor, which is the intention. We need to question the person's and the individual's sincerity. You know, that they try to seek fame or publicity or money out of their encounter. If so, this could be indicative of a hoax. For instance, here I must mention Billy Meyer. I do believe that Billy Meyer did see UFOs, but by no means do I believe that he was able to photograph them so clearly and so perfectly. And then the question is, what did Billy Meyer gain from it? And he gained a lot. I mean, he created an organization, which is questionable in its own right. But you need to see what the person's intentions are. And then there is the third factor, the individual's health. Did the individual suffer from any form of psychopathology? Did they suffer from a physical illness, which could result in a hallucination? These three factors I use along writing the book to decipher whether it is a genuine case or it is a genuine case or not.
What I really love about these stories are you don't just tell a story, you also tell the research that went into it, the hypocrisies, and then the final conclusion.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we need to respect the fact that when it comes to UFOs, we can easily say whether it is real or not, right? I mean, if a UFO shows up on radar, then you cannot say that object did not exist. It doesn't work like that. But when it comes to an alien abduction, it is such a gray area because it could be the case that they saw a UFO and they were not necessarily abducted. So I always work with the premise that I will give you all the information you can find, and the information will come from a reputable source, you know, not Wikipedia. And then you can come to your own conclusion. I mean, everyone can come to their own informed decision after looking at all the facts.
Why do you think that all of our governments cover up these cases? Do you think it's beyond the government, as in like the Men in Black or even something beyond that?
Yeah. I think if you look at the last 5 years, you can see the difference, right? Now we have actual military personnel coming forward, because you can never get rid of the fact that this phenomenon is one of the most interesting phenomena that will captivate people. So the second someone sees a strange light in the sky, they will record it and then they will post it, and that post will go viral. And that shows a lack of control to a degree. I mean, if someone's posting this footage where you see this light performing erratic maneuvers, then you start questioning, does the government know? Does the government have the technology to compete with this aircraft? And that creates a lot of instability. The government in the individual's eyes will start to lose power, because you start saying, these are more advanced than us. So the biggest illusion that the government can provide is that they know about it and that they are studying it and they have a response for it, which is what we're seeing in the last few years, where we're having, you know, official papers coming out and saying that, yeah, we've been studying the phenomenon, we've spent millions on it, we're having official footage declassified, like the Tic Tac and Flare and Gimbal. And I think it's the illusion of power, of control, where I think the only option that the government has left, rather than ignore it, is to say that we know about it and we are studying it. That is the only thing that they can do.
You mentioned the Tic Tac. My friend said in 1967 that these crafts were getting their energy from the water. And then when I see the Tic Tac video where it actually goes underneath the water, and some of the research is showing that they believe these crafts are getting their energy from the water.
Yeah, indeed. And I'll tell you this. I mean, what we're talking about right now is transmedium travel. It's one of the observables that indicates that a UFO is ET in origin. And transmedium travel means that I can travel in the air and as well as underwater. And the Tic Tac, what it did is that it was flying in the air, it outmaneuvered the fighter jets, and then it traveled faster than the US's fastest submarine underwater. So it went it was in the sky, it went underwater, and then it shot back up. The Tic Tac happened in 2004. In 1967, in the book In Close Encounters, I write about Herbert Shermer's case. And in the book, the chapter is called The Abduction of a Police Officer. And Herbert Shermer was a police officer.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And he was abducted, as he states. And one of the things that comes out of the abduction is that these beings travel underwater. Now, back in 1967-68, everyone thought that this was ludicrous, impossible. How can you have an aircraft travel in the air and underwater? That fact by itself used to disprove Shermer's story. Nowadays, seeing all of this footage, suddenly we're questioning, was Shermer actually lying or not? He received messages saying that these beings have underwater bases, and they mentioned a few locations, for instance, off the coast of Florida, off the coast of Argentina, and they're all underwater. So Shermer stated that these aircraft traveled underwater. And it's funny that there's this sort of indication. As I was writing the chapter, I remember saying, so maybe he wasn't lying. And if he had come forward nowadays, maybe they wouldn't have taken him for a fool, you know?
So I'm 13 years old when my friend told me the underwater theory and made me say, wow. Have you ever come across a story that just made you say, wow?
Yeah, definitely. So many instances where I genuinely was left questioning everything, writing the book, everything. And I must mention that there was one chapter in particular in this book, and it's the Kentucky abductions. And as I was writing it, I remember stopping so many times because I was genuinely, I wouldn't use the word scared, but I was genuinely dumbfounded by what I was finding out. And basically, this is the story of how three women were abducted and they were subjected to some cruel experiments. And seeing how their lives just fell apart after the encounter, it made me question everything. I genuinely just was so speechless. I didn't know what necessarily to do, you know, with the book, with anything, you know.
What got you interested in the UFOs or UAPs in the first place?
I remember, I mean, I've been interested since I was very young, and I remember reading Jim Mars's book, Alien Agenda, and the book, Alien Agenda, it explores many phenomena, right? It doesn't go into UFOs only, but it goes into many different phenomena, and it gives you a brief overview. And after reading that book, I started questioning, you know, do UFOs exist? Do aliens exist? At first, when you do surface level reading, you'll see some wild theories, you know, that they are reptiles walking in the White House. And, you know, and that puts me off completely. Because, I mean, they could be right, you know, these theories. I cannot answer that by any means. But these theories put a negative light on the phenomenon. But as you dig deeper, as you start looking at the classified papers, and you see how the Air Force has been actually investigating these encounters, you start questioning everything. You start questioning the small things that you do on a day-to-day basis, and you start thinking philosophically and existentially. You know, I mean, what does it mean that we are not alone? How could it be that we're not alone and this information is not readily accessible to the public? What does it mean that these individuals are just abducted without their consent, and they are subjected to some of the most intrusive experiments possible, and then they are returned only with amnesia, so they do not remember a single thing that happened? These are all questions that filled me with curiosity and a desperation for answers. I'm not closer to finding out any of the answers, but I have more questions more than ever. But now I know certain cases which took place and which I cover in the book. And it makes you question the importance of certain things. You know, it's certainly, the phenomenon has a lot of spiritual and philosophical implications and that come with it, you know.
In your book that mentions the farmer with the lavender field and the UFO that landed there and what he went through with these beings. He suffered symptoms from this encounter, says they're not here to hurt us. That confuses me.
Yeah. That what you're describing is perfectly. Morisma said this case took place in 1965, and it took place in Valenzuola. I could be butchering the name, but it's a French. It's in France, right? And Morisma said he was a lavender farmer, so he had this beautiful lavender field, and throughout the summer of 65. He had been finding the lavender croppings with their sprout cut off, so he had a lot of damaged crops. And he thought simply, you know, there were two boys just messing around. He didn't think any of it. But on the 1st of July of 65, it was still early in the morning, around 5:30, Morris was smoking a cigarette to a pile of rubble, and he heard this noise. As he looked, he sees this oval-shaped aircraft, and it was around the size of a car. And the aircraft was fully landed on the ground. It had six legs, the main column landing in the ground. Although it was something that he had never seen before, at first he did not think too much of it. And the reason being is that many helicopters had landed in the field before, and he simply thought, you know, this was a helicopter. But the longer he looked at it, the more he realized that this was not a helicopter, because there were no rotors at any point. And a helicopter would certainly have made much more noise. So a few seconds pass, and then in the corner of his eyes, he sees two beings, very childlike. He describes them to be around 8 years old. And these two beings, they were bent over the lavender crops, picking at them. And then he says, okay, I found the culprits. I found the two boys that had been damaging my crops. So he goes to confront them. But as he does, one of them they straighten themselves, and they point this cylindrical instrument at him. And at the moment they do that, he becomes paralyzed on the spot. He cannot move a muscle, he cannot move an inch. And in front of him, he just looks at these two beings, and he's taking in their features, which look very, very obscure and things he had never seen before. He described them to have these massive pumpkin heads with large slanted eyes, and he could hear them communicate with each other using grunts, sort of. After a few seconds, the two beings, they rush back in, the oval-shaped aircraft, and the UFO speeds off. It completely disappears. What is interesting is that, you know, he leaves the field, he's completely distressed, and he goes to his friend and he tells him what happened. And his friend recommends that he reports it to the local authorities, but he refuses to do so. I mean, he knew that he would be ridiculed for it, and no one would take him seriously. So he just said, no, I made it up, let's just drop it. But word started spreading around the village, and the following day the local authorities, they ask him about it, and they insist on him taking them to his field, to the lavender field. And when they do, he sees that there are a lot of landing marks, and they could see the landing marks as well. But what is interesting is that as the days went by, on the landing site, only weeds started growing. The lavender stopped growing. So just to give the listeners a picture, imagine that you have this massive field, and there is a small circular area where the UFO landed. In that area, lavender stopped growing and only weeds grew for many decades later. Maurice Massey did tell them that he had seen two beings, but what I find fascinating about the case is that up until his deathbed, he did not divulge everything that happened. So a few days after the encounter, he started experiencing a lot of psychomotor problems. He started sleeping, he suffered from insomnia. He felt lethargic, he had a lot of headaches, he even collapsed. But we do not know the full story. At the end of the chapter, Maurice Massey was interviewed by many people, but in all the interviews, I mean, he spoke with Jacques Vallée, one of the most renowned authors in the field, and he told him that, I will not tell anyone what happened, not even my wife, and I will take the story to the grave. But he kept insisting that these beings were not out to hurt him. They did not want to hurt him at all. No, I do not know why. But he did not want to talk about it. And up until his death, he never did talk about it. He never did. So we do not know the full story. There's a lot of evidence which corroborates his story, that an oval-shaped aircraft did land, and there are a lot of landing marks. What corroborates his story as well was the fact that, you know, we know that these aircraft, usually when there's a UFO sighting, the radiation readings go up, and this is what could have caused the weeds to grow and the lavender to stop growing. But we do not know the full story. It is evident that there was some awakening of some sort, because he kept insisting that it had, but he never divulged the full story to anyone.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. I'll be back with my final discussion with Warren Ajuice right after these messages. I don't want to tell the whole book, but The one story that really affected me was the one where the UFO at the aerial school, for instance, landed outside that school with over 60-some students, children, that witnessed this craft and even has had telepathy experiences with this craft. That really bothers me to know that they can get near our children and near our military bases.
Absolutely. The aerial school sighting was one of the most weird ones because, I mean, how many cases can you say that you have over 50 eyewitnesses? I mean, this case has 62 eyewitnesses. They're all children. And their story lines up with one another. It corroborates one another, albeit with some changes. But what these children experienced was one day in 94, during their recess time, they saw a UFO, a literal UFO land. And I say UFO because it was the typical UFO. It was disc-shaped with a dome structure. And it landed on the school premises in Rua, Zimbabwe. A child ran in and told the teacher, listen, there's this strange aircraft. And the teachers at first, they did not believe them, obviously. Children have a very creative imagination. But as the days went by and the children started telling their parents, the parents started asking about it. So what they did is that on the Monday, they gathered all the children and they got them to draw what they saw. At the same time, simultaneously, Tim Leach from BBC, he heard about the story and he went to the school, to aerial school, and he talked to the children. And in the chapter, I include the entire transcript of the interview. And the children, one of the children, Kaylee, she said that she saw people. There was a white person and a black person as well. So not only did they see a UFO, but they also saw its occupants. And then the story sort of started growing and growing. There are over 50 drawings, which they're all different, obviously, because if they had drawn the same thing, then that means that it was agreed from before. So there's 50 drawings, they're all different, but they all have one thing in common, and it is this massive UFO. A few months later, John Mack, the renowned psychiatrist, he visits the school, and he speaks with a few of the children. And the children divulge that the beings, they sort of communicated telepathically with them. And the communication was that we must take care of the planet, and that if we don't, then obviously we're going to destroy the planet. And this is a common denominator across many abductions as well. I mean, with Whitley Strieber, he described the same thing, where he received these telepathic images where we, you know, involving natural disasters if we do not take care of Earth. And all these years later, all these interviews later, all these documentaries later, the story remained the same, that 62 children saw a UFO. Some of them, not all of them, but some of them saw occupants, and that they received these telepathic messages. At the end of the chapter, I do criticize some parts of the story, particularly Cynthia Hines' involvement in the case. Cynthia was part of MUFON, and a few days after the encounter, she visited the school, and she started telling the children that this is a massive story and that the United States has heard about it. But the children mentioned the UFO and the beings before Cynthia Hines' involvement. So you cannot say that the children started mentioning these weird details after they were visited by Cynthia.
This happened 30 years ago. I wonder if these kids still suffer anything since that encounter.
And I've heard that a few of the children did experience the phenomenon on other occasions. But I did not go into that in the book because I wanted to stay with the sighting that happened in 94. But for those of you who are interested, there's a lot of documentaries on the aerial school sighting. It's one of the most fascinating cases that there is. And some of the now adults have stated that they have seen UFOs on other occasions as well.
Where can people pick up the copy of your book, Close Encounters?
So my book, you can get it wherever you buy your books, Amazon, UK, US, wherever you buy your books, as well as ebooks. If you want to keep contact with me, feel free to follow me on Instagram. It's warren.ajus, so that is W-A-R-R-E-N dot A-G-I-U-S. I respond to all messages, all comments. If you want signed copies, feel free to contact me and we can sort that out as well. I post predominantly on Instagram and Facebook as well. I always love talking to people after an interview, you know, get their feedback. I do have a lot of material written for a potential third book. I'm not sure if that's, you know, it's something that you need to gauge from listeners, you know. I never write books just for the sake of writing a book. If I see a need for it or something that I personally would read myself, then I would write it, as is the case with my two books. But we'll see.
Well, Warren, I really enjoyed both your books, and I wish you the best and look forward to talking to you again in the near future.
Thank you so much, Al. Genuinely, I appreciate it so much. Thank you for having me on. It's always nice. You know, I love this podcast so much. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Warren Ajuice. And please check out Warren's new book, Close Encounters, Exploring the Mysteries of Alien Abductions. The link is at the bottom of this episode. I'll be back in 2 weeks with my final episode of 2024, wrapping up Season 6 on Ghosts in the Valley podcast. Lee Spencer is in the back seat of his family's car as it's pulling up the driveway of the house they are moving into. Lee notices a young girl looking at him from the upstairs window. No one else in the car sees her. This is the beginning of a 4-year journey of Lee Spencer's unbelievable events that happened in and outside of that house. Spencer's Ghosts, available now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, any place you get your books. Available in paperback and ebook.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.